Like the grateful dead.
Interrupting all programs.
We are controlling transmission.
Your mind is totally controlled.
Now, I am talking about your 50,000 watt intensive care unit, babies!
New York, just like I pictured it.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Pacifica Radio in New York City presents The Morning Dew Show. Concerts, rarities, and tasty tidbits from the greatest era of music ever. Every Sunday morning from 1 to 3 a.m. And only here at 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York.
Through the years, for people who have been on the very, very, very top end of the performing end of it, then yes, and even after expenses and all of that, they could definitely make good money from consistent touring.
Yeah.
But because touring is so expensive, unless somebody was literally at the top tier where they were, I mean, the gross was in the millions, and then even after taxes and expenses, they still had some money left. As you were saying, songwriting and publishing really was a solid way, when somebody was successful, to actually make a living.
Take your shoes off, let your hair down.
Now Name of the song is You Can Do It from Suspended Animation. That's Evie Sand. She is our special guest tonight, and we'll be getting into our conversation with her in just a few moments. But first, need to mention a few things before we get into the thrust of the program. WBAI is proud to team up with Rocks Off Productions for another three-hour cruise around Manhattan with Grateful Dead tribute band Wig Jam. Tickets are $25. Log on to rocksoff.com for more information. Hey, you can make 420 even more fun as Grateful Grass at the Capitol Theater not only features Keller Williams at Garcia's, Keith Kenny will also be performing there that night. Morning Dew has three pairs of passes to give away. First come, first served, and only if you can answer our mystery question, which has to do with the program you're listening to right now. If you know the answer, you must contact us at morningdew@wbai.org. That's morningdew@wbai.org. Here's the mystery question. What you need to do is listen for a song written by Evie's producer, Chip Taylor. And we're going to play it a little later on in the show. It's a famous song that was also a big AM hit for Merrily Rush and Juice Newton. Again, get that into us via email at morningdew@wbai.org, and you can see Keith Kenny with Keller Williams at Garcia's at the Cap in Port Chester, New York. Also at the Capitol Theater for our new and sustaining members of WBAI, we offer gift premiums of concert tickets at the Capitol Theater. Just $10 a month or more for a period of 12 consecutive months, and you qualify as a BAI Buddy member. For that act of generosity, we'll offer you a pair of passes to see the Dark Star Orchestra on either May 19th or 20th, your choice. You must email us at morningdew@wbai.org to secure tickets. That's morningdew@wbai.org. State your name, date of show preferred, and you will be put on the will call list upon verification. And this just in, Don Grossinger has an unspecified number of tickets to see the 40th anniversary of the Grateful Dead movie for one night only. Check Facebook page for details if interested. Our Facebook page is Morning Dew-WBAI. Welcome to Morning Dew. This is Stu Robbins at 99.5 FM in New York City and streaming live at www.wbai.org. Our guest on this program is American singer, songwriter, and musician with a rather unorthodox guitar style that we'll ask about soon. First, her career spans over 50 years, starting back in the 1960s. Was a rocky start, but chart success started to take hold in 1969. Our good friend Gary Raychick has introduced us, so let me introduce today's feature guest, Ms. Evie Sands. Hi, Evie.
Hello, Stu. nice to talk with you.
You too.
And everyone.
Oh, that's great. Thanks so much for coming on to the show tonight.
My pleasure. Absolutely.
Not for nothing, but you and I actually share a couple of similar circumstances in our upbringing. If,
do tell.
I'm going to. We were both born in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And we come from musical families, or at least mine partially musical. My father was a great piano player, and I played a little bit. My brother and my mother... Not much.
Well, you know what? Then that's the same, because it's part on my end as well. My mom was a great singer. My brother and my dad, not other than being lovers of music and appreciating it, but they didn't play or sing. So, see, it's the same. There we go.
Okay, so at this point we're tied, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I got one more.
Okay.
My granddaughter's name is Genevieve. We call her Evie for short.
I love it.
And I got to say, she wins, because she's the cutest thing in the world. I mean,
oh, that's great. How old is she?
She's 6 years old and just lost her two front teeth.
Oh, how sweet. That's really sweet. Nothing like it, right?
Nothing like it. And being a grandparent's the greatest.
It's like a little piece of heaven, right?
Absolutely. I talked to Tom Paxton one time, right, and did a nice long show with him. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about our grandkids, and Tom said something that really resonated with me. He said, you know what? You fall in love with them every day.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, Tom, that was really good, because that's exactly what it is.
Well, yes, the thing that's so beautiful about it is it's so pure.
Yes.
It's so in the moment and so pure.
Absolutely.
So when your Evie, your Genevieve, looks at you and just her eyes shine and she says something beautiful and pure to you, I mean, your life is made. It's
absolutely. And I could just hear her saying, I love you, Pop Pop. And that's, I melt. What can
right,
I do?
Right, exactly. there's nothing like it.
It is wonderful. Well, we're going to go back a little ways. And before we take this little head trip back in time, let me mention that you are still very much active and ready for the release of your new EP, Shine For Me. It is an EP, isn't it?
Yes, a 6-song EP.
Yes, okay. Which we will be able to sample some if you all behave and Evie lets us listen.
It would be my pleasure. I can't wait for everybody to hear it.
Okay, that's good. That's good. All right, so before we go down that road, you got signed to the Blue Cat label of Redbird Records around 1965 and toured with a very famous female group who had a few hit songs on the charts. You want to tell us who that was?
Okay, I think we can do that. It was the Shangri-Las. I think people remember the Shangri-Las.
Oh, remember, right? Walking in the sand.
Perfect. We should go on the road together, me and you two.
All right, definitely. I always wanted to be a rock and roll star. That's why I became a disc jockey. I'm a frustrated musician.
There you go. All right. Get ready. You can come tour with me this year.
Oh, boy. I bought some congas the other day too. So
what's good? Percussion's good. We love percussion, right?
Yes, my wife and I went out and bought a whole bunch of percussion. So we're set right now. Well, the Shangri-Las were a big band. How was that? How did that affect you at that early point of your career?
Well, it was fun. We did some shows together at that time where somebody from the label would come pick us up. And I just remember being picked up and the girls would already be in the car. And then we were noisy, you know, we were just talking back and forth about anything and everything. And I always think the poor driver was just such a noisy vehicle until nonstop, until we got to whatever venue wherever we were going, obviously for the shows. But it was fun. Yeah, we had a good time. It was really nice. I enjoyed it a lot, and I enjoyed doing the shows, those early kinds of shows that we did.
Now, a lot of girl groups came out of that same era, didn't they?
Yes, I think they kind of people refer to that stage as one, I don't know, or genre or something as girl groups. So yes, for sure.
Yeah, there was, you know, the Ronettes and the Crystals. Well, then you start getting into the whole Phil Spector thing.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever meet Phil?
Not really. No, I never did.
No,
not that
probably
I
a good. Thing. Maybe it's a good thing he carried
exactly.
A lot of guns.
Maybe I dodged a bullet, even though I was. I mean, I really was just a kid then. But still, I know a lot of people who know or knew him or did things. I mean, over the years later on, I discovered. But I don't ever remember any meeting with him. I had never had anything to do with him.
Well, that may be a good thing, you know.
<'cause>, yes, I agree.
John Lennon and May Pang went through an issue with him too. I know he shot off a gun in the studio, and the man was certified lunatic.
Yeah, I mean, there's my later on in this sort of timeline, the great songwriter composer Ben Wiseman, who I met later on and who was a mentor to me and became just such a dear friend, family, he and his wife. And then we did a lot of writing together, really successful. He knew Phil and helped Phil do some things in the early, I mean, he used to tell me these stories in the early days, Phil's early days in New York. And he had all these stories as well about just crazy stuff, you know, that happened in the studio and just, you know, wacky.
You could probably write a whole book about that.
Yes. I mean, just, for people that really were around that a lot, I think it's just, was like eye-rolling, just fun, you know, crazy, wacky
yeah.
stuff.
I mean, he was great at what he did, but wacky as a bed bug there, so.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, you then established a relationship with producers, composers, Chip Taylor and Al Gorgoni.
Yes.
When Take Me for a Little While was recorded.
Yes.
Before I ask you about the song and the story that goes with it, can you tell me a little bit about Chip and Al, who they were, and some of their accomplishments?
Well, let's see. They have long, long resumes. Al Gorgoni is a guitarist extraordinaire. So using the Wrecking Crew analogy, he would have been Wrecking Crew East, played on, I mean, hundreds or probably thousands of sessions. His is the guitar, let's see, what could I say, on Van Morrison's Brown Eyed Girl, you know, the intro, that's Al. Bob, you know, Dylan, Neil, you name it. I mean, just tons and tons of recordings.
I'm looking at a few here. At 17 by Janice Ian, Sugar Sugar by the Archies, Brand New Key from Melanie, I'm a Believer by the Monkees, Simon and Garfunkel's Sounds of Silence. He did that intro part?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Just too many to
Yeah,
to
yeah. Well, there was just a few.
He is an amazing, amazing player, classical guitar player as well, phenomenal. And a great songwriter and arranger and producer, and I might add, an all-around great guy. And he still is he and his wife are dear, dear friends. We love them so much.
Chip. Yes,
so,
can't forget Chip.
So, Chip, let's see.
Who is John Voight's brother, right?
Yes, that's right.
Huh.
And so Chip, a very successful songwriter, artist, and producer. Last 2016, was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. People know him certainly for writing Wild Thing and Angel of the Morning, a couple songs, for example. And just also... great guy, and also lifelong friend at this point, just fantastic. And Al and Chip met because of their respective musical endeavors, and they began doing some work together. Al did some things with Chip in the studio and music stuff, and then the more they got to know each other and like each other, they began writing together, and then they began producing some things together, and they had a great relationship.
Hmm. Well, you remembered, I mean, you mentioned Wild Thing before, the old Troggs song. Well, I'm attributing it to the Troggs just only because they made it famous. But I don't know if Chip would have imagined the way Jimi Hendrix did it in Monterey, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a great thrill and something that Chip loved and loves and cherishes to this day.
I bet. I'd consider it a notch in my belt.
Absolutely. It's something so special, really.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It was then, and it certainly is now.
Right. And Take Me for a Little While, they both wrote together?
No, wait.
Trey Martin wrote the song.
The writer of Take Me for a Little While.
That's right. But you recorded it. And you were the first one to record it.
Yes.
yet there's a not so savory story that goes along with that. Do you mind telling us what?
Okay, I can give you. I can give you the. What would I say? Would it be the Daily News version?
The Reader's Digest.
Yeah, the Reader's Digest version.
Yeah, sure.
So we did this recording. We were really, really excited about it. We thought we made a great record, and we felt it really had something going. And so test pressings were sent out, and someone in Chicago, it was a promotion guy who worked for Chess Records. They were located in Chicago. He got a hold of a test pressing, and he thought it was great. He thought it sounded like a hit, and I was, of course, an unknown artist. And right at that same time, Jackie Ross, who recorded for Chess, was in the studio trying to come up with a follow-up to her hit song, Selfish One. So he had the idea, why don't I take this to the studio, rush it over there, and basically be a hero in his mind, and say, hey, I've got it, I found the song, I found a hit song, this is the one you should do. So he took it to the studio, they listened to it, and they agreed, they went, whoa, that's fantastic. I think he made it seem like it was a publishing demo that he had discovered, not that it was literally a test pressing of a record that was supposed to be coming out the next week or 10 days.
But it was your version, right?
Yes, mine. Yeah, okay. My test pressing.
Oh, okay.
Right, that was, you know, these advanced test pressings that were being sent out so radio would begin to, Blue Cat Redbirds, Blue Cat Redbirds, promo people could start visiting radio stations and trying to get them excited ahead of this release, which was just about to come out. So at the Jackie Ross session, they stopped what they were doing and instead went to record Take Me for a Little While. They did their best to try and copy it, as best they could. And then they pressed it and released it and had it out on the street in about 48 hours.
Wow.
And what they did is they beat us to the street by a week. So they were officially released with the Jackie Ross version 1 week before my version of Take Me for a Little While came out. And looking at the trade, because I learned, about these trade magazines as a kid, like Cashbox, Billboard, all those things, I remember opening up the magazine, opening up Billboard, and after opening the cover, on the very first page on the right-hand side was a full-page ad that said, destined to be number one, Take Me for a Little While, Jackie Ross. And I remember thinking, gosh, what a shame. That has the same title as mine. Mm-hmm. Here's a song with the same title. Gee whiz. And Al and Chip and everyone, we all thought the same thing, because don't forget, this is before the internet.
Right.
So it wasn't until, I don't know, a few hours later or something, that we actually all found out that it wasn't the same title, but it was our song that basically had been stolen. Unknown, Jackie Ross had nothing to do with that. The people at the session had nothing to do with
She had no idea,
It was just misrepresented by this unscrupulous promoter who worked for Chess. I mean, even the Chess Records management, they had no idea what happened. But the upshot was, needless to say, my label, Blue Cat, Redbird Blue Cat, which was Jerry Lieber, Mike Stoller, George Goldner's label, and George Goldner was a promo guy and kind of a, I don't know, what you want to say, like a bad boy kind of guy. They talked to the Chess Records people. I mean, this was over the next maybe 2 weeks or so after the release. And once Chess Records found out what really happened, they pulled the Jackie Ross record off the market.
Really?
Yes, they took it off the market. But the end of the story is really a lot of radio stations that had already begun to play her record. And why not? Because she was coming off a big hit. It was starting to, what we would say then, right, bullet up the charts, and people were liking it. So the radio stations were very unhappy about that and had nothing to do with me or my record, but they were just unhappy with both labels. So they sort of balked about, a lot of them, about playing my record. For my record, only the radio stations that wait, which a lot of stations, a lot of markets, as you know, they just wait. They don't jump on records right away anyway. And some who were just waiting to see, well, which version of this record is going to happen. Those radio stations in those cities began to then play my record, which was now the only one on the market. And wherever it was played, it did really, really well, but it never could be across the board, you know, connect the dots nationally, just because of all of that fiasco that happened.
Hmm. What year was that? I'm asking that for a reason.
Take Me for a Little While was 1965.
Okay.
It came out in like the late summer of 1965.
Okay. The reason I ask is because there was one other version of it that the Vanilla Fudge did on their 1967 album, their namesake album.
Yes, that was after the fact.
Right, right.
And they're obviously their take on it, which was a whole different thing.
Yeah, well, they're like a cover band, you know, in a lot of ways, but they, like Richie Havens and Joe Cocker do, they make it their own, you know.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
It's a lot different. You know, mm-hmm. Vinnie Martell's a good friend of mine, and, you know, he's done a lot of help here for the radio station. And I go back to those days. I mean, that was one of the first albums that I ever listened to as a kid on headphones, you know, because it was such a great headphone.
And it sounded great. Oh,
my
God, yeah. It sounded great.
It really did. No, they were good. They were always pretty good. I like their interpretations of stuff. But that was the reason I asked, was because they had that on that album. They did a nice version of it, too.
Definitely.
But I'd like to hear your version of it. You think we can get that on the air?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're talking with Evie Sands right now here at 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. We're also streaming live at www.wbai.org. We've been talking with Evie Sands, and yes, I think we need a little bit of a lung break here, and, you know, let's play some music and give you a sample of how Evie did the song Take Me For a Little While, written by Trey Martin. And you're going to listen to it right now on Morning Dew.
I've been trying to make you love me, but everything I try just takes you further from me. You don't love me, no, no. So you treat me cruel. But no matter how you hurt me, I'll always be your fool. But if you don't want me forever, and if you don't need me forever, and if you can't love me forever, take me for a little while.
We just heard two songs from Evie Sands, our special guest here in Morning Dew at 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York. We heard I Can't Let Go, and that followed Take Me for a Little While. Now, Bad Breaks continued with this song a little bit, too. I Can't Let Go took a bit of a hit and didn't achieve the expected popularity, at first at least. What happened over there?
Well, basically, it came out right on the heels of Take Me for a Little While, and a lot of radio stations were still very, very, very upset with both labels, and obviously what mattered was they were upset with my label. It had nothing to do with me. Basically, I just got caught in the middle of that situation of radio being kind of angry, and also the funny thing is it had nothing to do with my label, really, because it wasn't they're doing, but the radio stations were just upset about the whole mess that happened with Take Me for a Little While. So a lot of them, in a way of just protesting, decided that they were just going to boycott some of the Redbird Blue Cat product for a bit as they're making a line in the sand. And so the same thing. So I only had just some stations where Take Me for a Little While in cities where it had done well, those stations were willing to play it. But again, a lot of them just weren't. And in the interim, the Hollies went ahead and they loved it, so they recorded it and then wound up in a short few months, and they had a nice hit record with it.
Wow. Boy, you got hit from all angles, didn't you, there?
Hey, you know what I said? Welcome to the music business.
Yeah. Yeah, I always wanted to be a punching bag, right?
Right.
I don't mean to laugh, but, tough.
I do.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, you got a sense of humor.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, you moved along to Cameo Parkway. Isn't that correct?
Yes. I did those two the two singles for Redbird Blue Cat. In fact, I think maybe, I don't remember exactly if they went out of business after that. I'm not sure, but possibly. But yes, Cameo was the next place that we did some recording. This was still with Al and Chip.
If I remember correctly, that was Chubby Checker's label, wasn't it?
It was, but what was interesting is I look at it as really two Cameo or Cameo Parkways. There was, just sort of my words, the original Cameo Parkway, just as you suggested, with Chubby Checker, Dee Dee Sharp, Mashed Potatoes, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And that was really a Philadelphia-based label. And then, I'm not sure of all the business again because I was just a kid, but it kind of morphed into being a New York City-based label. And it was run by Neil Bogart, who eventually, he left there, he went to Buddha, and then he and some people formed Casablanca. You know, this is going later on, before he passed away very young age. Hmm. So my association with Alan Chip at Cameo was the New York, the last hurrah, the last phase, you know, like the eighth inning of Cameo when it was based in New York.
Yeah. Sounded like they had their own little disaster brewing at that point.
Well, they did, because then they went bankrupt.
Yeah. So. Well, I was going to ask you how that affected you, but that kind of answers it right there. You know, they go bankrupt, I guess everybody goes down with the ship, right?
Yeah, well, that's what killed Angel of the Morning, which we recorded for them.
Now, Alan Chip wrote Angel of the Morning?
Just Chip. That's just Chip is the composer of that.
Okay. Were Alan Chips, on board with you through this little run of Bad Mojo that you were going through?
Yes, this is still my work together with Al and Chip. The Redbird, the Blue Cat recordings and the Cameo recordings, it's still us recording together.
Yeah, you were still buddies with them and,
working
together.
Because it also was in a pretty compressed period of time as well.
I see. So what finally broke this string of bad breaks? Because that wheel's got to turn your direction eventually here, right?
Well, it did. So, okay, so Angel of the Morning came out, and then that whole, again, disaster was really on its way to be a hit. Cameo went bankrupt.
I don't think we told the folks about that one yet, did we?
Yes, I mean, so that ended. So now we, I signed with A&M Records, and which was great. I absolutely loved A&M. They were based in L.A., of course, on the old Charlie Chaplin lot, and it was really like a family. It was so great there. And we recorded some things, and one of the songs we recorded was a song called Any Way That You Want Me, and then that broke the string.
That was, all right, so that took you on the upswing, if you will.
Yes, definitely.
Well, we're talking with Evie Sands right now, and I think it's time that we hear, this is a very famous song, it's called Angel of the Morning, what we were just talking about. Do we have a version of that by you that we would like to get on the old turntable here?
Sure.
All right. For those of you that remember what turntables are.
Well, with the nice resurgence of vinyl, a lot of people do now.
That's right. That's right. The only thing about the vinyl that's coming out, it's really heavy. It's very well made, but it's expensive now.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. You're paying $20-$30 a record. You know.
Well, it is. I've just been going through all the saga of test pressings for my new record, and every time they hand me that, I go, "Whoa, this is heavy."
Yeah,
it
really
weighs so
is.
Much.
You know, in the old days, I remember Columbia of all the labels had the cheapest vinyl. They really did.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. I found that it scratched the easiest, and it was kind of light and flimsy. You know, and that didn't seem right for CBS or Columbia, whatever you want to call them, but let's see, Verve and Vanguard and labels like that had some of the heaviest vinyl.
Mm.
You know, I was a vinyl freak. I still got 1,200 of my records over.
Oh, great.
Yes, and
well,
I still use them on the radio.
It sounds so good. I mean, this new record of mine, I'm kind of blown away of how great it sounds on vinyl.
Oh, that's good. We're going to talk about that in a minute.
But just because you mentioned, I was just saying, yeah.
Yeah,
great.
Definitely. All right, let's play Angel of the Morning. And are Chip and Al on this song with you?
Yes, this is still the Al and Chip saga.
Okay, so let's get that on without any further ado. You're listening to Morning Dew at 99.5 FM WBAI New York.
Strings to bind your hands,
not if my love can't bind your heart.
And there's no need to take a stand,
for it was I who chose to start.
I won't be blinded by the light.
if it's love that you want, baby, you've got it. From the depths of my soul, baby, you've got it. But I've been watching you, and I don't think that's your game. Boy, there's no need to explain. Any way that you want. Of my soul, I'll make them come true. But I've been watching you, and I don't think that's your game. Boy, there's no need to explain.
Talking with Evie Sands here, just in case you joined us just at that right moment where you heard the female voice and expected mine, but but she's here with me, and you make a great disc jockey as well as musician.
I love doing it. Honestly, it's really fun.
Yeah, radio is good. It's cool. And so being a musician, I suppose. But remember,
yep.
I'm a frustrated musician.
Yeah, it's nothing like it, right?
That's right. Okay, so things went well with Any Way That You Want Me?
Yes, things went really well. It sold at least 500,000. I did a lot of touring. I continued doing lots and lots of TV, great stuff like Johnny Cash Show and Everly Brothers and Glenn Campbell and all kinds of good stuff.
I love those shows. Those were great.
Yeah, oh, those were great. It was great. Just so much fun. Great people to work with. Johnny and June, two of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. Glenn Campbell was just fantastic. So gracious and kind just about how he let me work and do things on his show. And Everly Brothers, great. And then, yeah, and just a lot of shows, touring and concerts and things. And so it was great, yeah. All that stuff was really good. The only thing that business-wise that wasn't great or really smart was really an offshoot of some of what happened in the way things were done then, which was, in general, most artists did not automatically go in and record an album and then see if there was, as we would say, a single to pull off the album and release. They would go in and do, and so like me, we'd go in and do two or three songs, let's say, at a time, and hope we'd have a hit single. And then when something began to do well, the record, these, again, major record labels, would give an okay to go ahead and do a full album. So that was very general rule of thumb, you know, the way things worked. So what happened is we did that with A&M, and then when Any Way That You Want Me, the single, became a hit, of course, we got an okay to go in and do and finish a full album. But by the time we were able to record all the rest of the songs, get it done, and for the label to have their normal lead time to prepare a release, when it hit the street, the album, Any Way That You Want Me, it was like 6 or 7 or 8 months later. So it's like not connecting the dots, and a lot of the momentum was lost, and it really just wasn't a great way in the end of doing business. And I mean, I'm not the only one that that happened to, but that's sort of what happened as a little sidebar with the album.
Interesting. I didn't expect to hear that, and, but that makes a lot of sense. So I've always looked at the... I have two Relic Cashbox mag. Remember Cashbox?
Sure.
Yeah, I have the 2 year-end issues, 1968 and 69 of Cashbox.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little couple of collector's items that I've held for all these years, and I still have them. Now, if you look on the top 100 of whether it be singles or albums or whatnot, I mean, look at the albums. The albums, the concept of a great album was really there. I mean, 50 out of the 100 of those, I could sing every song back, you know, on that record,
mm-hmm.
back and forth from memory.
Mm-hmm.
And my memory's going, too.
So you're trying to say that that's really saying a lot, right?
Yes, absolutely. you get me. but seriously, you know, do you think maybe these days the concept of the great album, like you had Beggar's Banquet with the Stones, and then that was followed by Let It Bleed and Exile on Main Street, or Benefit mm-hmm. from Jethro Tull, followed by Aqualung.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the Dylan stretch. I mean, my
God. Oh,
God,
Blonde on Blonde. Yeah,
I mean, bringing it all back home, Highway 61, Blonde on Blonde in a row. How do you get much better than that?
Right.
You know? So my question was, do you think maybe the concept of the great album has gone by the wayside and the attention's gone back to the single again?
Well, you know, I think in many ways it has, to some extent, and that's partially because of the delivery system and just the way things have changed, over these last few years with digital. Initially it was primarily digital downloads, and now a lot of that, of course, has shifted to just streaming, endless streaming. So it's kind of a single bite. It's like going to a place and have food and having appetizers, and not necessarily thinking of a full meal, and conceptually putting a whole meal together.
Yeah.
And yes, there are still some, as always, and I'm sure there will always be great albums that continue to be made, have been made, and will always be made. But the delivery system, like I was saying, and the way things are done currently, definitely kind of takes people away, puts things in more of like little single bites of music, as opposed to the whole like a whole album, because it was so, and also just the physical, and that's why I love the resurgence of vinyl, if for nothing else, and for those people, because how fun was it to have this physical 12-inch physical thing,
yes,
and pour over,
yes,
the album cover, or if it was a gatefold.
Oh,
or
you're speaking word magic to my ears.
Right?
Yes.
And follow along and look at, and almost we would know, okay, who did this, who played on it, who wrote it, who all...
Right.
The graphics. It was really something special. But when something is digital, it doesn't change our love and appreciation of the music, the way it touches our heart and soul. But it's kind of transparent. It doesn't exist, like, at that moment in our physical world. So we get things in sound bites. And, I mean, even look at, like, for example, a platform like Twitter, which was based on just little blurbs and little sound bites.
Right.
So that's kind of the way our society is, and it doesn't necessarily lend itself in the same way to just everyone really thinking and dreaming about whole, full conceptual albums.
Yes.
The way they did at one time, they still do, but I think it isn't the same.
I am 100% in agreement with you, absolutely. The technology has changed it. And look, if anybody really can put an album together. Now, you don't have to wait for A&M or Polydor or any, you know, Columbia to give you the big break. You can do it in your basement with some sophisticated, not-so-sophisticated equipment, you know?
Well, yes, because beginning in, I think, it started with, as the technology began to change, which goes back even to, like, ADAT machines. And when things became, technology made it possible for people to do things that before that technology existed, we could only go to Capitol recording studios, and we needed the Village recorders, or we needed these huge budgets, and we needed these giant monolithic companies, or even the smaller boutique ones, but nonetheless with budgets,
right,
to fund stuff. So, yeah, I mean, now in theory, someone can record something, put it together. There's various ways it can be released just digitally. And, well, look at what just happened with the Grammys. Chance the Rapper, might possibly be the first person to ever win a Grammy who put no physical product out. His was just completely a digital release.
Really?
I didn't know that. Yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't follow that at all. Huh.
So I think that's a first.
Like,
nothing in the physical world to hold on to, just digital.
We have a couple of firsts. We have that, and we have a president who communicates with us at 140 characters or less.
And also with a vocabulary that's... Okay,
yeah.
We won't go there.
Yeah, okay. I think we got our point across there, Evie.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Why spoil something as beautiful as music and art with something that really is very distressing and depressing?
You know what? I like what you say. I like your sentiment.
Let's
talk about your new album.
Fell in music and wonderful things.
Okay. So. Let's talk about the new EP.
Yes.
All right. There are 6 songs on there. All have a nice different feel to them. You want to tell us, first of all, when and where it's going to be available. I haven't asked you about a website. You want to give us some basic information that our audience can take away, and also we want to play some music for them, too, but we'll do that after we talk about this a little.
Okay, sounds great. Well, the new EP is called Shine For Me. It's going to be released April 22nd on Record Store Day, and it's going to be a vinyl release at first, to part of the celebration of Record Store Day, and then shortly thereafter, like maybe a week, 10 days, or maybe 2 weeks at the most after that, there will be physical CDs available. And then just after that, there will, of course, be digital release that will be available for downloading and streaming and all the usual places, including, of course, physical or digital available on my own website, which is eviesands.com, or the record label website, which is rspotrecords.com, which is just the letter R, the word spot, records, rspotrecords.com. And it's my own label. I'm really excited to be a label owner.
Oh, that's great.
Because it's great. There's just all kinds of things that I'm doing and I plan on doing. And there's a lot of work involved, as I've always known, but really having to be involved with so many other things that some of these experiences, when we were talking about the way it was in the major label era or heyday, just like with movies and the old studio system, just the whole indie world, lots of possibilities. So I'm very excited that I have my own label now. So there's that. And then, I mean, I'm available in all the usual places. I can be found on Facebook, and I can be found on Twitter and Instagram, and just all the usual stuff.
Now we gotta give them a little dose of it. I did like that first song on there, Rodeo.
Yeah, let's start with Rodeo.
Yeah, Rodeo was real nice. The album, the EP that Evie Sands is coming out with is, well, she just told you where and when to get it, but the name of it is Shine For Me.
Mm-hmm.
First song we want to listen to is Rodeo, and you're listening to Stu Robbins talking with Evie Sands here.
Hello. This is Mike Pinder, co-founder of the Moody Blues. You're listening to WBAI, New York.
It's okay, let it flow, then dry. take a chance riding life's big rodeo. Just remember to breathe, hold on to your hat, and rock and roll.
We just heard Rodeo from Evie Sand's new EP. And boy, that's good. I like that, Evie. I really do.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy with it. No. Thank you.
No problem. Before we go into another song from the EP, what I would like to do is, I meant to ask you this before, but you have an unorthodox style of stringing your guitar and the way you play it. You're not just the average left-hander, southpaw, or whatever I should say.
Well, really, all it is, I got a guitar when I was a kid, and I didn't know any better. I'm left-handed, so I picked up the guitar, which most typically people play right-handed. Like most of the time, when you see people playing, they're holding it, and their left hand is on the fretboard, and their right hand is like strumming. So I picked up the guitar the other way around so that I was playing with my right hand on the fretboard and my left hand doing all the strumming. What that meant is that the strings are upside down. So the low E, which is the thick bass string, is on the bottom for me instead of being on the top. It's other way around.
Yeah.
So the high E, like the thin string, is on the top, which means when I play and I bend notes and things, I'm pulling down on the strings, whereas typically right-handed players push up, or, as I call them, regular traditional left-handed players, they do, the strings are reversed, so they have the same configuration like right-handed people do, which means the low E, the bass strings are on the top, and the thin strings, the high E is on the bottom. But I really didn't know any better, and I started playing that way, and then I found out it was Al Gorgoni when I was a kid who told me that I was doing it wrong.
Really?
Being, of course, one of the world's great guitar players, and he explained it to me and suggested that maybe I should just try to see if I could play right-handed and give it a whirl, and if not, if I had to be a lefty, that I should, as I mentioned, reverse the strings and do it in the conventional way. I tried playing righty, and it just didn't feel right, and then when I went to play lefty with thinking of the strings the other way, I thought, oh, what difference does it make? And I was just a kid. It's like I'm already into this and playing. So I went back to my rogue ways, and I stuck with it, and then I found out later in life that Otis Rush, the great blues player, plays that way. Albert King plays that way. The only thing is he used a lot of alternate tunings, not the standard tuning. I mean, there's a handful of people out there, I mean, that do play that way, but it's different. Oh, and one thing is people think that Jimi Hendrix does it, but he doesn't, because they always see him often with a right-handed guitar body, and of course he was left-handed, but he did actually reverse the string.
Okay.
So that's why people will say sometimes, oh, well, you play like Jimi Hendrix, meaning in that fashion, but no. He was, in fact, a real regular traditional player who just did it left-handed. So,
wow.
But it's fun. I mean,
and you still play like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's, for me, is normal.
That's normal. That's great. I love that. It's a great story. That's good. You know what's kind of funny about it in a way is, I bought my wife Nora a violin. She wanted to learn. You know, she wants to learn a violin.
Mm-hmm.
This is very recently, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed to get some strings and a new bow for it, because, you know, we got it on eBay, and it was, you know, as is. So she anxiously got me to go home and work on the stringing it for her. All right. Well, guess what? I strung it back once.
Oh, that's great.
It is. Now I still got to take
job,
it apart.
Sue.
Yeah, right.
Nice work.
So if you ever take up the violin, look me up, all right?
Oh, that's great. Well, I could probably play it then.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Right? I heard that you were selling a used violin with backward strings.
Yeah, there you
right
go.
Up, no street, right up my alley.
Right. There you go. That's me. That's me. I neglected to ask you earlier in the interview about your songwriting prowess and your accomplishments in that area, because your career is so diverse and you've done so many different things. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, your songwriting and how you reckon with that?
Yes. Well, as soon as I got a guitar, then I had a way to express myself, and I went full bent into songwriting. And the first song that I ever had that was released on anything was back on the Any Way That You Want Me album, a song called It's This I Am, which in later years got rediscovered by Beck and Beth Orton. And so that was fun. But then that just, I got full tilt boogie into it. And so beginning with the next album and then the next albums after that, I wound up having just wonderful artists. I mean, just fantastic to have great people like Barbara Streisand, Dionne Warwick, Dusty Springfield, Gladys Knight. I'm leaving out, you know, tons of people. Karen Carpenter, a lot of guys too. Record the songs, and that was just so thrilling. I mean, not only to have my songs recorded by others, but by such just fantastic, phenomenal artists. And then just the way, the different ways that they treat street songs. So a funny thing happened, really, with Gladys Knight, which is one of my favorite cover recordings, by the way. She did a cover of a song called Love Gives You the Power. But Love Gives You the Power is really my song, I Love Making Love to You, which was on my A State of Mind album, but with different lyrics. So you might say, well, why? What happened is her reps called to say that she loved the song, I Love Making Love to You, and wondered if we would be willing to write a new lyric for her, because she loved the music, but at least at that time, she was into singing about positive spiritual love, if you will, and not so much the physical side.
Mm.
So it took about a second or less to say, of course, right for Gladys Knight, yes, one of my favorite all-time artists. So the only thing we asked was that if we could work directly with her, and that was for a good reason, because, as you know, doing things with several people in between waters down communication, and then the real intent is changed or lost completely. So it's a time waster trying to have a third party explain, well, this is what Gladys wants, and then in turn trying to translate our ideas or questions to her. So they agreed, and it worked great. We did it all by phone. We would play Gladys's new lyric ideas. She told us what she liked, and in the end, she had a song that she really felt good about singing, and they made a brilliant record. So that was just a fun little kind of a side thing of sometimes things that happen with songs where someone, instead of just doing it as it exists, but they'll call maybe and have a request about something different. And then it's fun hearing really different versions, interpretations, like Barbara Streisand did a version of Love in the Afternoon that was also on my State of Mind album. It's completely different from mine. Or Beth Orton's version of It's This I Am that I mentioned just before, she did kind of a trip-hop version of it. So I love hearing things like that. It's just really fun to hear these different interpretations. But all of this in the end has just come full cycle with being able to to write and put this new record out. It's one of the great joys. Is really I love writing so much.
And you wrote everything on this.
I did. I wrote everything on there. One song is a co-write, the song "Full Dose of Love." I wrote with Scott Hackwith. The rest are solo writes.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, I didn't play bass and drums, but pretty much most everything I played on, and I did a lot of the recording and arranged and produced it, and you know, I've worked with some other people in the studio for mixing and just some, like, a bigger, better theater, so to speak, like to put everything together in. But
well, you did some great work here, that's for sure.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really so excited about people hearing it, and I'm so looking forward to getting back out on the road now with it. We have a bunch of shows going forward the rest of this year, and plan on getting back over to the UK and Europe, and I'm so excited. I'm so obsessed with music, like, just always the same for me. There's nothing like it.
You got it in your blood. There's no two ways about it, you know?
I do. You know what? I honestly always would say it's like a blessing and a curse, because there's any number
double-edged
of
sword,
things,
huh?
I could probably have done in this life. And done well, reasonably well. But music, it's just, from the time I was 2 years old, I've been obsessed with it, and I still am. And there's nothing else that I ever would rather do. I just keep doing it forever.
Well, you keep doing it because you do it well.
Oh, and, thank you.
All right, and why don't you do it for us now? Let's listen to the title track, "Shine for Me." We just heard "Rodeo." That was good. This is a real nice song, and I particularly liked it right upon the first hearing. So why don't we do that? And, we'll be back in a few minutes. Here's "Shine for Me." We're talking with Evie Sands, and this is her work right here on Morning Dew. If you believe enough,
you're never very far. You gave me your hand, so you're always with me, no matter where you are.
I know
the simple pleasures when we're together is like the beauty of a child. And without you, life just wouldn't be worthwhile. So easy with you, I don't have to try. And the sound of your laughter will light up the day. Happens every time.
I know
you're my little piece of heaven till heaven goes out. Without you, life just wouldn't be worthwhile. Back when I remember, we almost didn't make it, 'cause I never gave us a chance, but you waited. Finally, I woke up one night and couldn't sleep when I knew that it was you. First, or finish every line.
I know.
Home is where we are together, close in your arms for all time. And without you, life just wouldn't be worthwhile.
We just heard Without You and Shine For Me. Evie Sands is our guest here tonight on Morning Dew, and this is from her new EP, Shine For Me. We heard the title track, and you've got a little story that goes along with that, huh?
Well, yeah, Shine For Me. People may think I'm a little woo, but that song was really channeled. It's the only way I know how to say it. I had an idea, and I sat down. I was going to write. Felt I was had a song that was coming, and next thing you know, it's like my hands were drawn elsewhere. And I remember almost thinking to myself, "What am I doing? I have something else I'm supposed to be doing." But I was just compelled to write this song, and then the lyrics started happening. And it's almost like, "What is this? Where is this coming from?" And as I was hearing it, I thought, wow, I don't know what this is, but I like it. It's where it's coming from. And it just all came out in a way that it's the only way I can explain it, that it was just channeled. And Without You, after the fact, I realized that it really truly is a love song, and it never uses the word love in it. It's sort of stepping back, like when a painter sometimes steps back from a canvas and squints and says, "Well, what do I have here?" And it was just afterwards I thought, "Whoa, the word love is never used," and as I say, it truly, really is a love song.
Well, so far you're batting 1,000 here with the CP. I think, and I wish you the best of luck with it. That's for sure.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I liked Like a Rock. I had a little straight-ahead rock and roll in there, and I kind of enjoyed. And
yeah, me too.
I would like to thank you for being my guest tonight on the program. And
well, I would like to thank you for having me and thank everybody for listening.
All right. It's well appreciated both ways here. And I'd like to take us out with Like a Rock. What do you think?
Sounds great.
Okay, this is from Evie Sands' new EP, Shine For Me. This is Stu Robbins, and I'm saying goodbye. And Evie Sands?
Goodbye, everyone, and hope to see you soon somewhere, wherever you are, and back east, anywhere in the world. I'll see you this year.
All right, and we'll be announcing any dates that you may want to filter down to me.
Okay.
And see
Thank
if we can get
so
some people
much,
in. Yeah, no problem. Here we go with Like a Rock on the Morning Dew program. Take care. Have a great week.
I wanna
but it did. Full Dose of Love, Like a Rock, Without You, Shine for Me, and Rodeo. The six songs on Evie Sands' new EP entitled Shine for Me. And she was such a good guest and such a good sport. I really appreciated her coming on to the program. The new EP is to be released on April 22nd. And you can get more about Evie Sands. Just look her up on Facebook. We've also got a few pairs of passes, first come, first serve, to see Keller Williams and Keith Kenny playing with him at Garcia's on 420. And we have three pairs of passes, first come, first serve. If you can answer the mystery question, during this program, you heard a song that was written by her producer. His name is Chip Taylor. He's written a lot of famous songs, and this one in particular was an old AM hit that was made big by Merrill Lee Rush, and Juice Newton had one on the charts there, a version of it. So if you could tell me the name of that song and write it to us at morningdew@wbai.org, morningdew@wbai.org, you could pick up a pair of passes to see Keith Kenny play along with Keller. And you just have to get on it. So think real hard. If you were listening to the program, should come pretty easy to you. This is Stu Robbins, and we're going to hear a few more from Miss Evie Sands right here on Morning Dew.
Another dream. must leave you all alone. But you know I made my choice many years ago. Now this traveling life is the only one I know. But you know I love you. Yes, I love you. Oh, I love you. But you know I love you. Yes, I love you. Oh, I love you. But you know I love you. I love you. Yes, I love you. But you know I love you. I love you. Yes, I love you. But you know I love you. Yes, I
on the coattails of our interview with Evie Sands, we're listening to some of her older music, and in particular, Suspended Animation is the title of the album that this song we just heard called Brain Damage came from. We also heard But You Know I Love You and One Fine Summer Morning, that dating back to 1968. This is Stu Robbins getting ready to pack it in and say have a nice week. Thank you very much for joining us. We leave you with one more song from our special guest today, Evie Sands. This one's called Picture Me Gone. Take care. Peace out.
Nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to switch the station. You are locked into our frequency at 99.5 on your FM dial. If we wish to make it louder, we can turn up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we can tune it to a whisper. We can take the music and change it to fit all that we want you to hear throughout the course of this broadcast. We can take the music and change it from vintage psychedelia to soft, mystical reggae. We can transform a 60s classic and propel the song right into modern times. For the remainder of the program, sit quietly and we will control all that you hear. You will experience the awe and mystery that takes you from the depth of night and covers your entire body with morning dew. WBAI, New York.
What are they, Dad?
They're hippies, son.
I thought like Donald Reagan got rid of all them in the 80s, man. Talking about them yippy to yuppie, man.
Stuck in the 60s happens to us, too. Listen to Morning Dew every Sunday.
The Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture has a history of collecting and preserving cinema by and about talent across the African diaspora. Rewind, the best of film series at the Schomburg, invites Black Star Film Festival, African Film Festival, and the Urban World Film Festival to showcase visual narratives that express diverse global experiences by emerging and established independent filmmakers. Rewind, the best of series, takes place April 17th through the 19th at 6:30 p.m. First come, first seated. For information, go to schomburg.org.
On Saturday, April 22nd, those who loved, respected, and admired the people's attorney, Lynn Stewart, will gather to celebrate her life, revisit her struggles, and reaffirm our commitment to Lynn, other ancestors, and to each other. Come to St. Peter's Church, the Jazz Church, at Lexington Avenue and 54th Street. Doors open at 2 p.m. You can take the 456 or the NQ or R trains to 59th Street. That's St. Peter's Church from 2:30 to 7 p.m. on Saturday, April 22nd, in remembrance of our legal warrior, Lynn Stewart, because the struggle continues. Doors open at 2 p.m. For more information, go to lynnstewart.org. That's LYNNESTEWART.org. Or call 718-789-0558.
Gone too soon. Hello, everybody. This is Eli here from the Brooklyn Folk Festival. The festival is coming right up April 28th, 29th, and 30th at St. Anne's Church in Brooklyn Heights. This year, the Brooklyn Folk Festival features more than 40 different bands playing blues, jug band, old-time string band music. We got great songwriters, Puerto Rican music, Turkish, Balkan, Native American music, and more. We have Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Choir coming down, as well as hip-hop pioneers The Last Poets, the Thunderbird American Indian Dancers, and many more. There's also going to be workshops, film screenings, and special events, including the famous banjo toss, banjo throwing competition. Don't miss it. Tickets are reasonably priced, and the venue is easily accessible by public transit. Visit brooklynfolkfest.com for more information and for tickets. That's the Brooklyn Folk Festival coming up April 28th, 29th, and 30th. Hope to see you there.
This is WBAI, and this is Fred Eagle Smith for WBAI in New York. Stick it in your ear.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Good morning and welcome to WBAI New York. The show is Ear Massage.